What up, world? Welcome to another episode of Architects, where we speak to the architects of art, the leading voices of music video, filmmaking, and beyond. Individuals shaping the culture of our past, present, and future. I'm Taj Critchlow. Today's guest has quickly become one of the hottest hip-hop directors around. Growing up in Nigeria and England, he initially had his sights set on the NBA, playing college basketball at Campbell and Bellarmine University. After getting derailed by injuries, he pursued a career as a rapper while working for his brother Ludi, a music video and film producer. His first break came after meeting our very own director X. He played X his self-directed music videos in hopes of promoting his rap career. But X saw something else. Soon, he became X's treatment writer, coming up with concepts for music videos. His real breakthrough moment came when he got the opportunity to direct a music video for the Atlanta rap trio Migos for a little song called Bad and Bougie. The music video was an instant hit and now boasts over 1 billion views on YouTube. Since then, he has worked with some of rap's biggest superstars, Lil Baby, Young Thug, Stormzy, Hedy One, Lil Uzi Vert, and more. So please give a warm welcome to my man, Daps.
What's going on with you, Daps? How you been, though?
I'm cool, bro. Staying busy, staying alive.
Yes. So you say you're staying alive. You're in Atlanta, you know, and I know you were just in London. You've been moving around a lot. So
I was.
What's going on in Atlanta? What's happening? You know, I'm not sure if you're allowed to, you know.
Atlanta, what's going on here is a lot of chicken wings, a lot of guns. A lot of hookah. That's what's happened in Atlanta.
Nice. How often is Atlanta? You mentioned that you're working on a secret project. I'm not sure if you're allowed to spill those beans, but is Atlanta gonna be like your new base?
I'll be between here and LA, you know. But I feel like either city I'm in, I'm gonna be traveling a lot anyway.
Yeah. Well, to your point, you go where the work is, right?
Right. But there's some things I want to do business-wise in ATL that aren't really possible with the scope for LA. So here's my base for now, but I'll be in LA monthly.
Got it. So it's the point of this conversation. I want people to get to know you, you know, the man behind the lens. And let's talk about, you know, your background, your come up. You know, you're a man of Nigerian descent and a man that's traveled a lot. You know, I'm seeing places like Kentucky and London, of course. And let's talk about that, man, about just all this traveling and all these different places you lived in and what that has done for you in terms of shaping and molding your mind in terms of your creativity. I'm curious to kind of get a thoughts on that, because I would say when you travel and live in different places and customs and culture, it just gives you you know, ideas and inspirations and all these different things. So I'm just curious to kind of know how that has impacted you just as an artist.
Yeah, for sure. I feel like when you read about places, you know, in a magazine or a blog, or you hear it from secondhand info, it only gives you a certain aspect of it. It's never going to be a well-rounded, accurate representation of that place. But when you go there and you can feel the nuances and hear the nuances and see people's way of life, that is truly some of the best education you can ever get. And some of it can be applied in different ways. Even though you went there for this reason, you know, on the outcome, you can then receive this information that can be applied to this field or that field. So I've lived in 4 different countries. I've lived in, you know, I'm Nigerian, but I don't think I had a typical Nigerian upbringing of super sternness and you have to be an engineer or a doctor or else you're a failure. You know, my mom was a pro athlete. You know, and then my dad's a writer. He's like a journalist and a political commentator. So that alone already is that's very atypical of a Nigerian upbringing. And then there was a lot of, There was a lot of importance placed on extra curricular activities growing up. So like you just can't be in the house just going to school. Like, are you playing an instrument? Are you messing around with videos? Are you acting? Are you playing ball? Are you hooping? Like, what is it? So it's not just about the traveling for me. It's just about the general scope of how I grew up and the influences around me, be it siblings, older siblings, be it family members, parents, uncles, aunties, whatever. That plus the traveling around a lot. You know, I've lived in Nigeria more than once. I've lived in London more than once. I've lived in Spain for a little bit. I've lived all over America when I was playing ball. You know, I went from the block in London to a farm in Connecticut.
Wow.
For my last year of high school. You know, I went from one of the biggest projects in London to literally a farm. Like, there was beef, cows and chickens with beef, and like hawks, chicken hawks beefing the chickens, coyotes beefing the chickens. Oh, who's milking the cow? Who's killing the mouse in the basement? All kind of shit. So that alone, just that crazy switch in lifestyle from city to country. I was like, oh shit. Then I was there for a year, North Carolina. That was also in the middle of buttfuck nowhere. Buist Creek, North Carolina, when I was playing ball out there. And then that was also a wake-up call as well, just seeing that way of life. Because you hear about the South and the Deep South. I mean, that wasn't deep, deep South, but that was South enough. And, you know, you hear stories about people being the way they are, whatever, down there. But then when I was there, it was some of the nicest people I've ever been around in my life. Yeah, I didn't have one incident of race or whatever issue. Very giving, you know, Southern hospitality, just really nice people. But, you know, but also on my college campus, there's kids flying Confederate flags in the window, and I'm next to the cotton field and the tobacco field, and I'm thinking, oh shit, this must have been interesting 200 years ago. But then now as an adult, I'm like, huh, was everyone nice because they were nice, or they were nice because I was shooting hoops? After that, I got my master's from Kentucky. I was in a college called Bellarmine. I played my last two ball years of ball out there, and I got my master's out there as well. Once again, great, great people. Lived in New Jersey for a little bit, went back to London, and then I was in LA for 6 years, and now in between LA and ATL. So
mad. So through this journey, you know, of course, traveling initially it was for sports. You know, you taking that DNA passed down from your parents to you to kind of follow that. Where did you get this love for filmmaking? Where did you develop that gene?
I would say that I've always had something in me that was always creative, and it wasn't always about film. It was just about creating in general. So the first times I remember creating stuff was I used to design trainers, like, you know, like sneakers. So, you know, I have them upstairs somewhere. I've got designs that I thought I was going to work for Nike. I have designs where I was just drawing stuff thinking, yeah, I'm going to be a Nike designer. That's the first time I remember actually being creative by myself without anyone saying, hey, do this. And after that, I've always had a very musical family. So I've got a brother that's a producer. I've got uncles that were in bands. I've got this uncle, that uncle that played this instrument or whatever. So after that, I would say it was music next, making beats, rapping. And that was the main thing. And in my head, I thought, I'm going to the NBA or I'll be a rapper. Those are the two options. But the whole time I'm playing ball in college, I'm making mixtapes all the way through. I've got several mixtapes that I've had since I was a kid till now. So the whole time I'm either making beats or engineering or rapping. You know what I'm trying to say? So I've always been creative in terms of the output. And then in terms of film, I've always been heavily interested in film, but as a consumer. But I'll say having, once again, creatives around me, whereas my older brother, OT, as an actor, I was watching adult films since I was a kid. Not adult in terms of like porn, adult in terms of just, you know, like not for kids. But I'm taking it in and I'm breaking it down from a young age, whether it's having discussions or convos or arguments about stuff, whether it's 1992, White Man Can't Jump. I'm a little kid when I came out. I'm young, you know what I mean? Or whether it's Reservoir Dogs or Casino or Goodfellas or whatever. But I'm watching these as, or Scarface, watching these, you know, these films as like kids. So I always had a love for film and the industry in that sense. And I would say when it came to me actually making film stuff, that didn't come until my 20s. I never made any real film stuff until my 20s, other than I tried to start a rap blog called heavyspitter.com, where I'd go around interviewing rappers and then like recording their freestyles. But that's not creating content. That's just holding a camera while they rap to the camera. That was maybe when I was 19, 20. So yeah, I would say the whole film stuff in terms of me creating that came
But to me, that's, but I'll be honest, I wouldn't just I wouldn't disregard that, because if you think about
this way,
the fact that you wanted to create this blog and capture rappers rapping, that to me is storytelling, right? So it's one of those kind of things where you're going through this maze of life where we're trying to figure out what we're trying to do, where I want to be. And even though you have all these talents and you've seen all these things around you, but you don't realize you picking up that camera was the seed that was planted that now has gotten you here today, right? Just like with X, when I met X, he was a poet. He used to do slam poetry, and his spark was he shot a poetry video that got a lot of reaction from people. And he's like, I think I can do this thing. And that's when he started studying Hype Williams and blah, blah, blah. So it's kind of, again, this is your Spider-Man moment where you've always kind of dabbled in the arts. You've always liked music, sports, lifestyle, which we're going to get into further in this conversation. But if you look at how things turn, you know, you're shooting commercials and you're doing music videos, and now you're getting in now to into now long form stuff now, right? So it's like this is literally in your DNA, which is incredible. But I just wanted to kind of highlight that.
Well, what did happen though, Dabs? Because you said you were playing basketball and dabbling with rapping. So when did film actually come into the equation?
I've always been a rapper. And I still am. I never will stop being a rapper. So that has never changed. I'm just not a famous rapper, that's all. But in terms of playing ball, I went through so many injuries that it just didn't become fun anymore. You know, knee injuries, back stuff. And then the appeal of playing pro overseas in Europe and Asia just didn't really get me grab my gears, you know. I've seen friends that do it. I have friends that still do it. I know this to them, that's their life and what they can handle and what they can take. But it just didn't appeal to me to have my life and belongings strewn all over the world in deep Eastern Europe in some second tier league. And then next year you're in this person and then fighting with agents and doing this and doing that. It just wasn't appealing to me. So in my head, if I can't play in the league, I ain't playing. So, and that's how I treat my life now even with film. I want to compete against the players in the league. I want to play in the league. Whatever field I'm in, I want to be in the league. You know, so it wasn't like when I stopped playing ball after my degrees, it wasn't some doom and gloom thing of, oh, what am I going to do now? I've always had something that I loved as much as basketball, which is creating stuff. So when I stopped playing ball, it wasn't like my life has ended. I've been making stuff. I've been creative. So it was just this is not going where I see it going. Let me switch gears to my other shit that I like doing anyway.
So how did that happen? Like, what was switching gears? What were your early film pursuits looking like?
My early film pursuits, I would say, once again, is that blog I was doing, heavyspitter.com. So that's me running around with the camera. You know, I was in like Chicago, Jersey, New York, London. And then after that, my brother Luti, he has his own production company, Luti Media. And he founded that, a good 15, 16 years ago now. It's been a little while. So he was doing this whole film stuff before I was. So I think the first time I remember me actually doing something on that scale was me being in New Jersey and then this rapper from London wanting to do a video in New York. And Luti's like, yeah, can you help me produce this video? I'm like, I don't know what that means. He's like, well, I'm transferring the money to your account. Figure it out. and then that's the first time I remember doing a video. And it was a shit show. It was for Rage. Director Rage. I was the producer, apparently. I didn't know what a DP was. I didn't know what a runner was. I didn't know what catering was. Nothing. Imagine taking someone from nothing. I knew nothing about nothing. I didn't know what a camera lens, nothing. I know nothing. It was a shit show. That was super duper thrown in the super deep end. I'd never been a runner. I don't know anything about anything. So Rage definitely helped me out with that production, and he basically helped me out with everything on booking everyone. So that was a quick learning curve. After that, I think I did one more video with Rage where he had a rock and roll shoot in Pennsylvania somewhere, and I had to drive the rental van to Pennsylvania and back in some like cabin somewhere for some like skateboard video. And I remember Rage giving me like a couple hundred bucks, and I thought, yo, someone just paid me a few hundred dollars to drive a fucking van to Pennsylvania and back. This is like, wow, what a good look. Thank you, Rage. Like, I don't know how much it was. It wasn't 1,000 or nothing, and it wasn't 100 either. Maybe, who knows, 300, 400 or whatever it was. And I'm like, wow, free food, and I can see people playing around with cameras and shit, and like, have my own bedroom. Wow. This is, yeah. And that was like, that was right after college, so probably the age 24 after my second degree. Yeah, 24 probably. I remember like, okay, this is pretty interesting. And then after that, I moved back to London, and then that's where I really got stuck in with Luti Media. But that was on the production side. But while I'm producing for these directors, whether it's a Rage or a Ben Peters or Carly Cussin, all these people, I'm learning, I'm seeing firsthand what they do. And while I'm producing, it wasn't really for me. But I'm doing the job like I could do that. And that's way more fun. That's way more to my talents and personality. But getting that first job is very tricky. And a lot of people thought that I got a leg up in London via my brother, because they saw what happened in the end. And we're going to get there when I finally, whatever you want to call it, get lit or whatever. But before that, nah, London was a struggle. I wasn't getting any jobs. I can count the amount of jobs I have got on one hand in London before I left to America. Like, literally, I might have done 3 videos there, maybe 3. And one of them was because some client hit us up with £500 budget. They don't know the difference between who's a director or not. They don't know whatever. So, yeah, that one got slid to me, a £500 video. But other than that, yeah, I did one more video for Priya Kalidas and I forgot who was featuring on it, a rapper. That was, you know, like a $1,000-2,000 budget or whatever. And after that, yeah, it was my videos for myself. So when I wasn't getting in the door with all these pictures I was doing, writing treatments every day, I did like 30, 40 treatments in a row, and I heard no 30, 40 times in a row. Couldn't book one. So I said, I'm taking matters into my own hands. And then, you know, this rap shit is really me as well. So I'm just going to direct my own videos. So put some money together. I was getting money, doing other stuff. So I had a little bit of pocket money laying around, shot my own content. And then I'm back on the rap train in terms of train of thought. But I'm doing it more as a general creative, I thought, on some like Kanye shit. Oh, where I can do rap and do visuals and do fashion and do... And. So for me, it was just like, yeah, I'm rapping, but I'm still doing the videos, and hopefully someone sees these videos. But in that moment, I can't necessarily say my main focus was to be a filmmaker in that moment, because now I'm on the rap shit. It was more about making videos for myself now, because no one's letting me in. So whatever, let me just do my own shit, and hopefully it can catch on. But it wasn't like full throttle, I'm doing it just because of the videos. It was videos and the rapping. And then my brother was Director X's UK rep. So X was going out to London sometimes doing videos for, you know,
Lil Mix and
The Wanted and all that. So I might have met X in London, maybe in the office in passing while I was doing an Excel budget or some shit, who knows. But I don't really recall him in London, but I think I see him in the office one time. But then when Luti and X did the video for Iggy Azalea, Fancy, that's when I connected with X. So I wrote the treatment for Fancy while I was in London. And then I started getting, that was it. I started writing treatments here and there and getting a little bit of money for that. That's when I wasn't with Luti Media full-time anymore. I was with Luti Media full-time for like maybe 9 months, less than a year. And then I just jumped ship because I was getting more money not being there doing stuff. So my money was good where I could live without having to be there full-time and work on my art and my talents. But I'm still writing treatments. So I've got one foot in the industry, one foot out, writing treatments. But Fancy came about, and then Luti was like, yeah, let's go to LA to go do this video. So we went to LA, and then X was in an edit session for Drake for a video that didn't come out. I forgot the name. But I remember just walking into... No, he was in a grade. The grade or edit? Edit. It was with Life was editing the Drake video. This was 2014, January 14. I remember it, January 14. X was editing the Drake video with Life. And I walked into this room and I'm like, yo, I thought I was in this big edit suite was the size of like a cinema or some shit. I'm like, yo, there's levels to this shit. Like, you guys are just here solo dolo ordering drinks and food and luxuries, food and sustenance. And I'm like, wow, this is really cool, man. Like, they have all this space and this giant movie screen to edit a fucking video. Right, this is mad. So I thought, but right now I'm in rap mode. So even though I wrote the treatment for
Fancy, Fancy, yeah,
I'm telling X, and I don't know X like that. He just knows me as Luti's brother. But one thing I regret about me and Luti did a documentary for Kanye in 2012. Oh shit, is there NDA for that? I don't know, whatever. We did a documentary for 2012, it never came out. He has the footage somewhere on a secret hard drive in Donda headquarters. But back then, 2012, I'm one of the producers on the documentary. I was around Kanye every day for 60 days, bro. Like, at least 5 days a week, I'm around him, right? And I'm seeing Virgil doing Pyrex, and I'm seeing Fabian Montique doing photography, Watch the Throne. I'm in a hotel with them as they're recording Cruel Summer. I'm seeing them in the Lanesboro Hotel with all these rappers and Manny Freshers in this room, and then this producer's in that room, and Hit Boys in this room, and then Big Sean is there, and so-and-so is there. I'm like, yo, this guy has got a music factory. He's literally creating history in front of my eyes, and he had the band, and he's doing the fashion, and he's doing this. And I never said a fucking word to him because I wanted to play my role. And I didn't want to ruin my brother's relationship because it's not my company, it's not my gig.
Right.
So I didn't want to step out and be like, yo, Kanye, listen, I'm nice, I'm a rapper, boom, 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 boom. And it haunts me to this day, like, yo, just take a risk in it. Like, and for 2 months, and one day, it was Kanye Dolo in the studio, in the fashion studio, whatever, and he's never alone. There was no security, no assistance, nobody, no humans. Me and him in a big, giant room. And I walked in, I was like, here's my shot where there's no distractions. He had a good day. He's cool, in a good mood. I could have just pressed play on my shit like, yo, my nigga, listen, I'm lit. What's popping? I'm trying to get down with good music. And so this day, that shit haunts me, man. Like, but I don't feel that bad because once again, it wasn't my gig. And I've seen how other people around got axed because they didn't play their position. I saw that firsthand. So I didn't want to get axed. And more importantly, I don't want my brother's company to get axed, that any subordinate guy is coming to the head honcho talking about, listen to my shit. So there's this battle of...
We could have heard you on Donda.
Never know. We could have heard you on Cruel Summer. So to me, it was this battle of when do you speak out and gamble versus playing your position and hierarchy. And yeah, I'm trying to say, it was a weird thing, man. And it always haunted me, like, yo, I was in a room with Kanye West for an hour at 11 p.m. And no one could stop me to say, yo, bro. And then I didn't do that. I was like, fuck, man, what a loser. So then fast forward 2014, I see X. I'm like, shit, I'm not taking a shot no more. So like, yo, X, listen, man, I know you know Drake. I know that's your boy. Look, I'm a rapper. Here's my songs. Let me play you my videos. But I'm playing the videos so you can hear the songs to give to Drake. that was my goal in my head. And then I played him a few videos, and he's like, that's not me and Drake's relationship. I don't meddle in his music stuff. You know what I mean? But these videos, yeah, these are hard. Yeah, from now on, you should work with me. I was like, all right. Cool. So
one door closed, so, a new, yeah. Another blessing.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So even though I had only done the Fancy treatment for him, mind you, during Fancy, we weren't even in cahoots like that. I was getting notes through my brother. I didn't even know him. And after that, just started writing more treatments. But I'm in London still. And that moment, call it February 2014, for the rest of 2014, I'm writing treatments for Director X while I'm in London on my phone. I'm making money writing treatments. I thought it was like, is this a trick or something? I'm getting money just to write on my phone. Like, what? iPad, not iPad, but laptop or phone. Boop, boop, boop. I'll be in the kitchen on the block. And then X ain't not winning the job. Out of every 10 pictures, X is going to win most of them. Because this was the Justin Bieber, Drake days. Like, yeah. Toronto, something happened where Toronto stars aligned for you guys. And then the universe said, Toronto.
It's our time.
So back then, yeah, X was hitting his job. So therefore, I'm making money because he's winning the jobs. You know what I mean?
Right.
Which other videos were you writing?
I was writing Wiz Khalifa staying out all night. I was writing Jennifer Hudson, that video, T.I. and Iggy, No Mediocre, Iggy, Black Widow, and then mad jobs that didn't go through. But these jobs, I was getting money for writing and doing treatment, and then money on top if it booked. I was making good money. Like, it wasn't light. It was good money for sitting down and writing on your phone and your computer. I thought, wow, this is mad still. But life is funny, because the more you write, and I'm telling people I'm a director, they don't fucking believe you. You're the treatment writer, bro. Because that's what they know you as. Nothing wrong with that. There's certain people now that I'm around, they will never ever see me as a director, even though I've done big things. They know me for what they know me as, and that's their comfort zone with me for some reason. So it's interesting that I had to fall back from writing treatments just for people to believe me when I say I'm a director. And I have to turn down those easy paychecks and say no. And I had to lie when they said, are you busy? I'll say, yeah, I'm busy. And I wasn't. And I'll turn down the free money, not free money, but I'll turn down the easy money just so in your psyche, when you think about me, don't think about no treatment. Think about a director. But yeah, that tenure with X was dope. Went to Brazil with him and my brother. And then it all kicked off when I got to do second unit on the Iggy video he did for Black Widow. Huge video, huge budget. 3-day shoot in Hollywood, crazy. Big time Hollywood cameos, Oscar winners. You know what I'm saying? You got people that was in the movies that I watched when I was a kid. Paul Sorvino, Michael Madsen. This is A-list talent in Hollywood, big time. And I'm seeing, you know, T.I. and Rita Ora and Iggy and all these people. 2014, it was like, whoa. And that budget was, whoa. I had never seen people play with so much money in my life, legally. It was like crazy. I couldn't fathom it. This is a lot of money. I ain't gonna say how much, but it was a lot. You could do the math. 3-day shoot, big A-list talent, Hollywood pop star. Yeah, it's big budget. And up to then, I had been on sets that wasn't just my sets, as me as the artist. A couple hundred pounds here, a couple grand there. That's not really in the league. So when I got to the second unit on that video, that came out of nowhere as well. And I got put in the deep end. And then finally my showreel had something that wasn't me on it. So my showreel was me, years earlier.
And then just Black Widow?
Yeah, basically. And it just jumped from me to Black Widow. It looked crazy on the showreel. It looked like I was lying. How did the fuck you go from this to that? I went from street ball to the NBA. I jumped high school, jumped college, didn't go pro in Europe. I went from street ball, Rucker Park, to the Lakers. I got drafted by the Lakers from from street ball. That's what it felt like. So now my reel is like, this is a big budget video. It's glossy with big DPs and all this system and art and fashion and some of fashion styling, all that kind of shit. So then that helped me book my next job, which was for a UK artist named Dappy. This was autumn 14. I don't know, September, October, November, something like that. So then I finally did that budget, and that was my biggest budget solo up until that point. And I wouldn't have got that job without having the Iggy on my showreel. So I did that video for Dappy, and that video did really well. Dope video. Now my showreel is beefing up a little bit. It's Iggy, it's Dappy. Now I'm like, but I'm still not getting love in London. So I booked. Yeah, you know what? I can say now, I think, out of every video I did in London prior to moving to LA, the only one that I won was Dappy, that I wrote the treatment for, pitched. They said, yes, we want Daps, and I won it. Every other video I did, whether it was for the 500-pound one or the one for Priya Khalidas for like 2,000, whatever that was, it was just a backdoor thing of, there's no one else available, let him do it type thing. So I finally won a video after pitching for 40 in a row. I had 40 times, bro. Nope. That's not easy to hear. So I tell creatives, you have to have perseverance in this industry, and you're going to hear a lot more no's than you hear yeses.
Right.
And when you're in this industry, you can't let that dampen your spirits. And it will dampen your spirits, man, because when you do these treatments, it's so hard to do a treatment, and you forget the job isn't yours. You forget that you put your pain, sweat, blood, tears, art, hope, finances, everything into this treatment, thinking the job, it's not yours. There's 10 other directors pitching.
Yep.
So anyone listening to this, just know that those early stages is a lot of pain and a lot of losses, but you don't really learn from the wins. You learn more from the losses. Like, the wins are cuddly. It's like baby thighs. It's really cute and soft. But the losses are hard in the moment, but that shit molds you as a man, as a woman, as a human. I'll say my biggest lessons I ever learned in life was from A, playing basketball, and B, losing. I never learned much from winning, bro. But in the middle of the loss, it's pain and suffering. But if you make it out of that mud and look back, it's like, ooh, you're kind of thankful for it.
Let's talk about your true, you know, breakout moment in this business.
The breakout moment is interesting, man, because I don't want anyone to think the breakout moment was just, it was, I feel like all the moments, sure, there's a breakout moment, and I know what it is, but all the moments before that led up to the breakout
moment.
And without all the little moments, there is no breakout moment. And all the little things add up. That's why you always have to attack stuff, because you never know who's watching it or who's looking at you or who's going to reference you and say, oh, that's a good kid right there. I like how she, oh, I like him, how his attitude was, boom, boom. Like, you just never know. So all the little moments add up to the big moments. Now, the breakout moment was I did the Nicki Heaton video with Migos. I met Migos on set. Boom. I did a Migos video for them in London, summer 16, called Cocoon. Cocoon was a street hit. I mean, it wasn't Versace's street hit, but it was a street hit. Even now, it's got almost 100 million views. It's got like 87 million views. It's a big song. So then after that was Bad and Bougie. That was September 16. Jesus, what year are we in now?
21?
Yeah, 5 years this month in Atlanta, and here I am. So September 16, I did Bad and Bougie. Mind you, Bad and Bougie, when I did it, had about 2 million plays. Audio only on the YouTube, and back then that was kind of a interesting number. It was like, oh, okay, this song is doing pretty interesting, right? Well, featuring this guy named Uzi. And then I got a call. They were like, yo, let's shoot this video for Bad and Bougie with Uzi on it. I'm like, I don't know who Uzi is, but yeah, let's go. I wasn't busy. Flew to ATL, and my go-to DOP wasn't available. I don't have any deal. I don't know no one in ATL. I'm calling DPs that fit the budget. I'm calling. My boy Lex is on set next to a DP named Darren Miller. And I said, X, man. I said, Lex. I need a DP, bro. He's like, when? Tomorrow.
Man.
He's like, where? ATL. He's like, hold on. I'm on set right now. Yo, Darren, what are you doing tomorrow? Gave me the phone. What's up, Darren? How you doing? Nice to meet you. Boom. What's up, bro? What are you doing tomorrow? Nothing. All right, I'm booking your flight. See you, ATL. All right, bye. Done. I'm in ATL. This is Migos before they signed to Capital. So they were still with 300. So QC was still with 300, right? Not with Capital. So back then it wasn't the glitz and glamour videos that we're seeing now with luxuries and trailers and security and glam squad.
Grind time.
Catering.
Yeah.
I was in the trenches, bro. When I say I was in the trenches, so were they. I don't want to... There's certain things I can talk about in like 2 years' time, I guess, when the statutes of limitations are passed. But we're only 5 years in. We might do this convo again in 2 years.
Yeah, 2023, we'll do part two.
Yeah, we'll do part two when there's no statutes. But let's just say we were riding around. And it was a crazy experience. And then the video just went nuts. Bro, the video went mad. I was like, what is this?
But hold on.
And that was October.
But hold on, Dabs. So the concept, talk to me. Because as we know, like, you're a very creative guy. You've written treatments before.
Yeah.
How did you get to that idea? How did you get to that concept? Was this a collaboration with you and Migos, Quavo? Like, talk to us about how you came up with that whole concept.
I would say I used to pray for Migos without praying for them. Basically, when I was doing pop shit, I'm like, please, God, just give me a rapper to work with. And I'm going to fuck this shit up. I said, just give me a rapper that's lit and I'm going to change the game. I swear. I used to say that. And because back then, I didn't feel like a lot of trap street videos were very creative back then. Now, the bigger budget stuff was creative. But street rap videos back then, to me, from what I remember, I could be wrong. From what I remember seeing, they felt kind of the same. And I said, God, if you give me a street rapper, I'm going to turn this shit upside down, I swear. So the street rappers fell in my lap. And for that video, Bad and Bougie, to me, I just did what the title said, Bad and Bougie. They're talking about girls that are good looking, bad, and they're bougie. Right. Now, there's two options to go down when I hear that. You either put people in bougie environments, which shows how bougie they are, or a lot of my work, which is my thing anyway in general, in juxtaposition.
Right.
So to make something stand out more, you put it somewhere where it's not supposed to be. So I could have put the bougie girls in a bougie hotel or bougie room, and sure, if you've got a budget to do great art direction, why not? But I said, let's put the bougie girls in the projects, in the hood. And let's push that juxtaposition. So now we have the base. So now from the base, you can now start thinking about how do we push that basic concept further? You get the Chanel McDonald's box. You get the girl riding the dirt bike in Versace silks. And then you start doing shit that sounds dumb, but it's not dumb. As long as nobody knows what it means, but it's provocative. It gets the people going. As long as it looks good, innit? Like, and then you just start flirting with it. Now, if I did Bad and Bougie right now, with the budgets I'm doing now, oh my God, it would be a mad thing. Back then, we were just running around scrapping. And back then, I wasn't taking any production fee. And back then, I wasn't taking no production fee or my fee. My fee was cut a lot in those videos, and there was no production fee. I was putting everything back into the videos. So that's how we got away with murder for a few of those Migos videos in the beginning, because I was putting money back into it. Because I believed in me and I believed in them. And money's not everything. And look what would have happened. If I had taken what I was supposed to take, certain videos wouldn't have looked like that.
Facts.
So conceptually, I think Quavo had the idea to do the noodles thing. I think he saw it on a Tumblr page or Instagram page. So the noodles thing, let's have the girls eating pot noodles. And then that was his idea. And then him climbing the billboard was very impromptu. Listen, no permit, no safety, no security. They were climbing the billboard, bro. We pulled up the lighting truck underneath the billboard. They climbed the lighting truck. They pulled the ladder down on the billboard, climbed the billboard. The girl climbs the billboard. We throw her boots after her. Ruby Rose, now she's lit. Ruby Rose was the lead girl in Bad and Bougie.
We
threw her boots up to her. We threw Quavo's blunt up. I had to try 20 times to try. Do you know how hard it is to throw a blunt from ground level to billboard level? Yo, when it comes to throwing blunts vertically in the air, niggas ain't really seeing me. I'm telling you now, if there were Hood Olympics, I can't do the crates. But throwing blunts vertically, nobody's really seeing me.
The backwards javelin.
Backwards javelin. You can't really see me. I'm throwing the backward javelin up to the billboard. He caught it. Boom. And it was lit. I threw it lit and he caught it lit.
That's crazy. You should have captured that in the video.
Crazy. Anyway, so conceptually, we just like pushing that thing when I had the idea for it. And it went haywire, man. It started growing, and it was a slow grower, and it grew and grew. October, boom. November, boom. December, it's the views are stupid, and it's not dying down. It's one of those songs that you don't get bored of. Even when I hear right now, it's hard to get bored of, man.
It was one of those, to your point, it was a snowball
mm-hmm.
that kept getting bigger, and.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And what was fun about it was a fun video. You're watching these guys in this elements. You're combining these two worlds because let's look at the fashion world, right? All mm-hmm. these top fashion designers, what do? They borrow from our culture. They borrow from our streets, our street aesthetic, our energy, you know? And that's why that record became what it was, because Bad and Bougie, and it just has so many definitions. But I love the fact that it was raw. And it was fashionable. Talk about working with Lil Uzi, because that video was a big one for him as well, because that was it was also his breakout moment. So how was
that collaboration? 458. Yeah, back then I didn't know who he was until the video. I'm like, oh, right. But his energy on set, I'm like, he's got this rock star thing about him going on. And even the way he was performing, these are the shoes. Yeah, what kind of?
Doing a shoulder shuffle for everyone who can't see.
I'm doing a shoulder shuffle right now on video, people. Ooh, what kind of Rari? 458. I was like, yo, this guy is fucking wavy. Once again, like you said, it was growing. And yeah, I think that did put him on the map in a different sphere, right, Uzi? January 17. December 16, I shoot t-shirt video. January 17, T-shirt hasn't dropped yet. Bad and Bougie isn't slowing down. It was number two on the charts. It was going to go number one. And to your point about cultural content, Taj, is there's only been a few times in rap history where someone has the clubs unlock, the charts unlock, and the streets unlock. You can have two of those, the club and the streets, but not the charts. Or the chart and the clubs, but not the street. To have the street, the club, and the charts.
Yeah.
Migos, 50 Cent, I don't know, someone else, or two, three people. Because it's just very rare to have that combo, bro. It was a magical moment. And the way they put out their content, whether it's Handsome and Wealthy, Versace, they've had hits, by the way. Big hits before. Handsome and Wealthy, Look at My Dab, Versace, Hannah Montana. Woo, 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 woo. But they were doing content the way I looked at it, how Nelly did his content. Down, down, baby. Not that they were similar in cadence or music. They're not. But in the approach, they're making street content consumer-friendly. If you go on Genius and read Nelly's lyrics for that song, he's talking so reckless. But, yo, he's talking so reckless, you would not believe what he's saying. But he masked it in the melodies. Shimmy, shimmy, coco pop. He's talking reckless.
Right.
50 did the same thing within the club. Go, shorty, it's your birthday. Go read the lyrics. Like 20 knives in the club. Someone's getting poked tonight. Someone's getting stabbed.
I guess double.
So what's funny is that it's this weird world of, so that's what I tried to do with the video. And I said, please God, give me a rapper and I will make this shit hot, because I also wanted to make street content palatable to non-street audiences. Someone asked me, oh, Dak, what'd you do good? I said, I make street shit look good. Like, that's what I like doing. So I feel like that's what I took into those videos. So T-shirt was January 17. And in my videos, unless it's a concept for a heist or robbery scene or whatever, I don't really like showing straps and drugs in the video. I'm not going to be the guy with 100 guns out in the video, unless you had a 100-man unit in your robbery. So I did the bank heist.
So let's talk about T-shirt, because I remember for me, what I loved about that video is the fact that here it is, you have these guys in a different environment. It was interesting because, you know, you have these guys in the cold. I'm Canadian, so I can relate to that, you know. So they got this kind of like, they're hunters. They're in the chalet. Like, you know, because like you said, you could have just, now for that concept, you could have just literally gone street shit, right? White, you know, 17-5,
same color t-shirt. Yeah.
Right. You could have gone hood. So what was the inspiration behind that concept?
But it was hood and it was street.
Right.
Because all the snow was all the cocaine and all the bows and arrows were all the guns. So I gave you street content without giving you street content. It was street, but I took the street and made it palatable. So now anybody can play it and have fun singing 17-5, same color t-shirt. Yay. That's talking about coke. So for me in general, it's about making street content easier to consume,
right? And you created these flagrant. And then your visuals were like metaphors to everything you're speaking about. It's because it's so crazy. Until you just broke that down to me, that went over my head.
No, it's getting more. I know, I'm breaking down even more. T-shirt is a parallel trap universe. Go to the dictionary right now and type in trapper and tell me what comes up. I'll do it for you, just so you know I'm not capping. Google.com, trapper. Trapper, a person who traps wild animals, especially for their fur.
Mm.
So T-shirt is based off what? The Revenant. The people in the Revenants are what? Trappers.
Right.
So T-shirt is trappers trapping while trapping.
Right.
and all the snow is all the white, and all the bows and arrows are all the straps. So it's a parallel trap universe. You're trapping while trapping, while making trap music while trapping.
That's crazy.
Taj's brain just exploded.
Yeah. And yeah, so that was a moment. Then Donald Glover went on Golden Globe. He won an award for Atlanta. Boom, boom, boom. And his speech, he said, Bad and Bougie is the greatest song ever. The streams the next day went up 520%.
It was a moment, man. It was a moment.
It was a moment, bro.
Yeah. What you did with those guys, again, you captured a moment, and that became a pop culture moment where people are like, yeah. Yo, Bad and Bougie. That was just what it was. It just became that kind of thing. And like you said, that's what really cemented them. But I still love the fact that even though they are now, you know, gaining, you know, pop status, they still were maintaining their street relevance by speaking what they're speaking. But like you said, you created this painting where it's like, my kid's watching it. Oh, all right, cool. Right. They're in the snow with some hot girls. This is cool. Not realizing that the metaphor is on some Scarface shit. You know what I mean?
Right.
Which I thought was really fun.
So that was the turning point in my career, was that week of Bad and Bougie going number one, and 2-3 days later, T-shirt video came out.
Bam.
It was a 1 week. I can't explain it, bro. It was so magical. It was a 1 week of Migos tornado, and everyone just get out of the way.
Right.
And you're going to get run over. No one dropped right now. It's long for you.
Right.
And that shit dropped. T-shirt dropped. Bro, people were hitting my phone. Vogue was writing about it. Someone from Noisy said this needs an Oscar. Vogue was writing about the outfits, and I'm thinking, wow, this is getting reach. And Bad and Bougie is number one at the same time, and T-shirt came back. And when they dropped T-shirt, they didn't drop the audio. The record label only dropped the video. If you wanted to hear the song, you had to watch the video.
Smart.
It wasn't available. Smart. It wasn't available.
Smart.
I'm like, yo, someone hacked IMDb and said I directed The Revenant. That's how deep it got. They were hacking IMDb, bro. So for me, that week was so intense. My phone was like a hotcake, but I couldn't even, yo, ring, ring. My phone was blinging off. And that, to me, was my breakout moment. January 17, the first week of January 17, 2000, January 17. And I remember it clearly, and that was a turning point in my career, factually.
Crazy. So let's talk about the next big bump. Again, another Migos video with another big superstar. You know, he just recently dropped his new album, which is breaking records, streaming records again. Our boy from Toronto, Drizzy Drake. So
Drizzy.
Now this collaboration was fun, different. Walk it like it. Talk it, right? So talk about that whole experience, because to me, when I heard the song, I was like, okay, this is interesting. What are they going to do with it? And again, you went, you know, a lot. What I love about what you do is anything that's going to seem, oh, he's going to probably go here, you go the other direction. So you created this really fun, lighthearted.
That was a wee one.
Right.
That wasn't my idea.
Got it. So talk about that. Talk about that.
Yeah.
That whole experience, making that video, working with these guys now with a whole new found fame. Yeah. And then of course their buddy, their collaborator, their Versace collaborator, Drake. How was that whole experience?
Right. And Drake wasn't in the Versace video.
No.
So that was the first video they did together. Now, that was Culture 2. Mind you, Culture 1, I did basically every video, right? Culture 2, they're now at a new label. Culture 2, the first single was what? Nicki, Cardi, and Migos, Motorsport. Maybe wrongfully so, but I assumed it was my duty to do that video. I thought I have suffered and gone to the ends of the earth and taking pay cuts for the last year.
Right.
And we are finally with T-shirt wasn't big budget.
Right.
Bad and Bougie wasn't big budget. Slippery was okay budget. Like, we were still with the independent side type shit. We were just getting by, and I'm putting shit back into the videos because it made sense.
Right. You invested in the project, you invested in them.
But no one knew I was doing that.
Right.
Nor did I say I was doing
it. They never do.
I didn't need points for it or clarification. Whatever. Who cares? I'm doing it because I want to do it. Right. No one begged me to do it. No one forced me. Cool. I want to do it. I'll do it again. I still do it. So for me, I thought when that thing came out, I didn't even pitch on it.
Mm.
Now, the boys weren't aware I didn't pitch on it. There was some, whatever happened. I'm not naming the pointing fingers. It's a long time ago, nor do I care. But I didn't pitch on it. I wasn't even aware.
Mud.
And the budget was disrespectful. The budget was nice. And I thought, wow, all these things I did, and I didn't even have to pitch on it. I was a bit tight. Not at them. It wasn't them.
Right.
So I called someone at whatever place I called, and I said, it's kind of crazy that I didn't get to pitch on this. I'm not saying give me the job. I'm saying let me pitch and tell me no, you didn't win it because you like this idea better. I can live with that.
Right.
I didn't get to even sniff it. So I was like, damn, man. So that was a little dampened into my little spirits. But one thing I'll say, throughout all of this, we've had our little whatever. But Quavo is one of the realest guys in the industry. And he's a solid, solid guy. And he'll tell you exactly how it is and what's happening and what's not happening. And throughout all this Hollywood shit, all this industry shit, salute to Quavo. Salute to the whole Migos. But me and Quavo talk more on a creative level. So salute to him in terms of how genuine and real he is. So
right.
That I will say. So I think the next single after that was Stir Fry. I pitched on that. I didn't win it. The video came out dope. I think the Asian director did it.
Oh, yeah. That's a good video.
Yeah, dope video. David, yeah. Dope video. I pitched on it. I didn't win it. When I saw the video come out, I'm like, hands off. Great video. No problem. I didn't win it. And the output, I've seen videos that I pitched on that I didn't win. And it came out, not them. I'm just saying in general.
Right.
And I didn't win it. And I'm like, that shit was whack, man. That shit was hot garbage. You know what I'm trying to say?
Right.
I said, you should have fucked with me on that one. That's happened bad times. But that one there, yeah, that was a hard video. The third single was Walk It, Talk It. Then City Girls was coming out around the same time.
I remember.
Yeah. City Girls. So P from QC was like, yo, I need you to help me do the City Girls video. I'm like, yeah, sure. Let me hear the music. Cool. I heard the music. I was like, I see where this is going, but I don't really get it. He's like, trust me, they're going to blow. I was like, I like what I'm hearing, but I don't really see who the target audience is.
Shit was really raw.
I would be horrible. Because remember, I'm a rapper's rapper.
Right.
So City Girls now and City Girls then are two different rappers.
Yeah.
They can rap now.
Right.
They got the flow, delivery, cadence, the breathing. Back then it was a bit, it wasn't hitting the bars like it is now. But I liked them as people then, and I liked the energy and what they were saying. I was like, oh, they're still dope individuals though. So I'm like, yo, but I ain't gonna lie to you though, that Migos Drake video, I need that. And I don't really tell clients that kind of stuff. Like, I've never told a client, let's do a video, and we did a video, ever. I've met all kinds of people from all walks of life. Big, small, medium. I've never looked at someone and said, hey, nice to meet you, I'm Daps. Oh yeah, by the way, let's work. And then we worked.
But this is a lesson to you, right? Because going back from the early part of this conversation, when you had your moment right there, you and Ye, You could have had that conversation, okay?
Pain and suffering.
Look, because one thing, Daps, I've learned. Hey, man, if I take a shot on net, if it gets in, great. If it doesn't get in,
I know, that's fine. I know. And that's how I live my life now. But in that moment, I didn't want to ruin my brother's shit.
No, I get it. But the irony is, on some 8 Mile shit, you have that one moment. Yeah. You never know if you're going to get that moment again. Right?
Yeah.
Because
the one shot did not make a chance to lose.
Yeah. Like you never promised that. So the fact that you put that energy out there and then now they're like, here you go, because you understand our business. There's no loyalty in our fucking business. Right? We've been there. I've seen it many times. I've seen directors giving their directors fees. I've seen production companies take no fees. We take a bath. We go in there. That loyalty gene sometimes has amnesia when it comes time around, and it's like, okay, now we got the budget. Let's go now. And all of a sudden,
Not to everyone. No. I don't know how I feel about that statement in general.
Talk to me about that then.
I agree, and I agreed more years ago. But nobody owes me anything, bro.
Facts.
It's just business. You're not my dad. You're not my mom. You don't owe me, and I don't owe you.
Right.
It's just business. If it makes sense, it makes sense. Now, that's being super dry and cutthroat. But it would be nice, of course, to have things reciprocated, because I live my life like that. If you look out for me, I owe you. So that statement, I get it, but I've also been there where I was doing the low budget. This DP was fucking with me. I couldn't afford to pay him. I paid him a couple hundred here and there. And then when I got on to the budget, I said, finally, I can put him on. I couldn't put him on. The label said, hell no, you ain't using him. And in the beginning, I didn't have that clout or showreel to argue with the label.
But hold on, though. But to your point.
I'm coming. Okay, go ahead. Let me land.
Right.
Now, when I'm in the budget lanes and I'm doing shit comfy, till now, why haven't I used him? He looked out for him, for me. Without him, I couldn't have done my first shits. And without my first shits, I couldn't have got my big shits. So till now, I'm in position. Why haven't I reached back and said, hey, bro, thank you all those years ago for when you looked out for me. I should be putting him on, right? I'm not a bad person. I'm not selfish. I put niggas on every day. Why not him? If it doesn't make sense, it doesn't make sense. So it's not so black and white. There's a lot of gray when it comes to that whole loyalty thing.
Facts. You're right. That's a really, really, really strong point. So to all the listeners, you hear that? It's just
business. It's just business, baby. But I make my business personal too, because for me, it's deeper than business, because I've done stuff for artists that no director has ever done in history. And it gets kind of deep. So I take things personal. If you look out for me, I'm looking out. If you don't do it in return, I don't hold it against you. It's cool. Just because you act this way doesn't mean I have to. But I keep people in a certain box. I know who to mess with a certain way, whatever. But I've gone to the ends of the earth for some people. I've done stuff that was very risky for some artists, bro, that I can't say. So, you know, everyone has different strokes.
Mad.
Yeah, very mad.
Let's talk about artists now.
Well, hold on, because we didn't. Do we want to talk about the actual video?
Which video?
Walk It, Talk It.
Oh, Walk It, Talk It. Oh yeah, sorry. Walk It, Talk It. I had another idea for it. It was a rush job. Drake was only available on this day. So was the Migos. If you don't do it on this day, you're fucked. The video got confirmed on a Tuesday. We shot it on that Friday.
Wow.
Rush job. The treatment. You could read it in 6 seconds. It was one page on a phone. The treatment was literally a page. And Coach K was watching The Get Down on Netflix.
Mm.
And then he was like, yo, let's do Soul Train. When I was younger, I used to watch the shit, Soul Train shit. You know what I mean?
Right.
And I'm like, oh, that's hard. So then when I heard that, then I took it I started doing my Soul Train research. I started figuring out which episodes I wanted to tailor it behind, the color scheme, the outfits. Then I got into it. But the initial idea, yeah, I think that was Coach K, man.
Crazy.
Yeah. But then I combined that with some 80s. Soul Train was more 70s, but then I combined some of my 80s stuff in there as well. Like from the, I took elements from Bad, the Bad video, I feel like.
Oh, nice.
As well.
Okay.
Yeah, just little bits and bobs like that. So that video was a combination of a few Soul Train episodes. And then, you know, we had, then after that, you know, then we start putting our heads together. Migos start chiming in, I chime in. So that was definitely more of a collaborative project. But then the day before, we still didn't have a comedian locked in. We had some comedians on standby, some IG, you know, like some great guys. But we didn't have the comedians.
Right.
And I'm calling Coach, I'm bothering Coach K every day up until the day before the video. Bro, can we get Will Smith? Can we get Kevin Hart? Can we get... And then I don't know what came to me. I was like, yo! Jamie fucking Foxx. He's like, yeah, that's my guy. Call Jamie Foxx. We got him probably midnight, day before the video. Day of the video.
That's wild, bro. You got Oscar award winning. Now, two-time Oscar award winning actor.
You know.
Comedian, you know, singer extraordinaire, Jamie Foxx.
You know. Big talent. And then Quavo put me on group text with Drake. Then me and Drake were talking. He said that he was going to wear a Jerry curl and all that kind of, like, yeah, that's hard. And then that was a smooth day, man. There was no hiccups. There was no headaches. That was one of the smoothest. That was one of the smoothest shoots. There was no drama, no nothing. The only drama came on the Genius thing that I spoke about when somebody removed my Free Huey poster on set.
What do you mean someone? Yeah. What do you mean someone moved your Free? What? Talk to me about that. What happened?
So the video is 70s inspired.
Right.
So you know me, I like quirky stuff. So whether it's putting people in the snow or doing this or doing that, if I can try and put an Easter egg in there. I thought this era was very synonymous with the Black Power struggle.
Right.
And in this living room set up, Migos, Drake, they got the cognac, they got his whiskey. I think, what was it called? Virginia Black or some shit?
Right, Virginia Black, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, we got this vibe. I thought, well, we need art on the wall. Let's have the art be of the people for the people.
Right.
Type shit. So we got the fist, we got the this, we got that. And then one of the posters I put Free Huey. And then on set, it's you know how it is, like the last scene of the day, you're running around, you have 10 minutes left to shoot. I'm scrambling. I'm in the edit. And I'm talking to the editor like, oh, my guy, where's the Free Huey poster? He's like, what Free Huey poster? I'm like, Free Huey was right there, bro. Go. He's like, there is no Free Huey poster.
Did someone jack your poster, bro?
Yeah. I called the art director. I'm steaming. Where's the Free Huey poster? He's like, yo, on set, it was a mad rush, and I forgot to tell you. Somebody came up to me. I won't say who or from where. Someone came up to me and said, take down that poster.
No.
And they said it so they didn't want you to know they said it. And it was a mad rush. It was just whatever. Who cares? It's just a poster, right? It was just whatever. Like, he didn't know the ramifications for me. Anyway, poster was cut. I'm like, wow, that's crazy. People really said that my Free Huey poster. Didn't want no problems. But in the moment, I didn't like it. But business-wise, whoever took it down has a product and a brand to protect. If you're investing X amount in your product, you might not want any hiccups.
Right.
And that probably wouldn't have given you any hiccups. There's a 99% chance there was no hiccups coming from that. But there's a chance that someone might have had an issue with it.
Yeah, dude, you never know, man. Especially these days, man.
You just never know.
Look what happened. Look what happened with Chloe Bailey. dancing to Nina Simone, and they ripped her to shreds. Like, it's too sexualized. It's like, what, she's paying homage?
Everyone's always got a problem. So now, as a businessman, I understand you have to protect your investment.
Right.
Anyway, dope song. It did what it did. It came out banging. Yeah, man. So that was another notch on the belt. Very well received. But I don't think Migos and Drake have missed yet. So that wasn't a surprise. What was a surprise to me was I felt like, and I don't know how much I care now, but I cared in the moments, was there was a stretch where I went crazy.
Mm.
Not literally crazy, but I went crazy in terms of my output. And I don't feel like I got certain accolades that I could have got.
What do you mean?
I never got nominated for certain things I should have been nominated for.
But hold on though. It's just business. Right?
It's not. See, in that sense it is. You're right. But that's how I started realizing
this is where I'm trying to come to you, right? I agree with you. Mm. No one owes you shit. Business is business.
Yeah.
But there's also, hey, it would be nice if
that taught me another lesson. The other lesson was it really is just business. That you pay to play. And whether you're paying monetarily, you're paying with handshakes, you're paying with shoulder rubs, you're paying with whatever it is, it's something. And then it made me less upset when I realized, oh, it's just business.
So the last question, which we always ask our guests, what's the last, I don't know, dopest, you know, what's the last music video or short film or branded content piece of work that really like lick your head off? What's the last thing that you watched that had you be like, oh shit, that shit's crazy?
2 days ago, Drake, Future, Young Thug, directed by Dave Myers, Way Too Sexy.
Mad.
That's the mad.
Shout out Kawhi.
Dave Myers is a problem.
He's been a problem.
He's a big, big problem, bro. Dave Myers is a big problem.
Yeah, shout out to Dave.
He might be a little bit mentally deranged. Big problem. Yeah, that video there, I said, yeah, this is a Mazzolino.
Former guest of the show.
He kicked off our podcast, yeah. Man. And this is a two-parter, and it was awesome to hear his stories. But yeah, man, I love the fact, again, you know, it's that curious boy in him that stays pushing these crazy videos for over 20 years of just creating visuals that just, you know, shock your system and just go for it. And that's what it's all about, man, making art that people are going to have fun, they can escape to, enjoy, laugh, but at the same time, being innovative. And again, Daps, thank you for this conversation. Like I said, man, just really proud to see how far you come from being a second unit director with X on, you know, Kendrick Lamar, King Kunta, to now, you know, shooting your own short films, directing in them, own production company. And I can't wait to see what the future has in store for the man, the myth, the legend himself, Dap. So again, brother, thank you for your time for chatting with Dean and I.
Nah, thank you. I appreciate you for having me. You know, you guys are doing a great job on this platform. Very, very interesting stories and guests. You know, it's dope tuning in. And also on the side of that, I definitely want to thank you and X, Taj, for all the alley-oops and all the lookouts you gave me over the years. You know, definitely helped out and all part of the process.
Respect, King. Well, like I said, bro, one love, and you know, let's keep it going. All right?
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Nice one.
And there you have it. That was crazy, man. My brother Daps, the Nigerian prince, the hustler of hustlers. You know, seeing him come up the way he came up, it's kind of nuts, man. Creative Row, keep a lookout for him. He's got a lot of shit on the go, man. And wow, thank you again for giving us your time, sharing your stories, your highs, your lows, your wins, your losses, but positive dude, man. And the moral of the story is just keep fighting the fight and believe in yourself, invest in yourself, bank on yourself, count on yourself, and shit will happen. All right, and now, as always, I like to give you guys a little gem to check out. And I just recently watched this film, okay? I watched it on Shudder. I just got the Shudder account because Exodus did something with AMC, which I can't really get into right now. And they gave me this really awesome account for Shudder. Now, if you don't know what Shudder is like the horror Netflix, where literally you can watch horror films that they made themselves, or they have horror films from all over the world. But it's like, if you're a horror fan and fanatic, this place is like the oasis. This is the heavenly garden of hell-seeking, terrifying, incredible movies. And I watched this movie directed by Kim Ji-woon, okay? And the movie is called I Saw the Devil. And it was insane. Literally, in short, spoiler alert, a serial killer kills a woman who happens to be the wife of a secret agent, and shit just goes bonkers. It becomes like a cat and mouse chase, but it's like, just imagine if Seven was directed by Tarantino. This movie is bonkers. It came out in 2010. It was just action, drama, a little underlying hint of horror, but the shit was just extremely violent, but cinematically beautiful. And I would highly recommend it. Check it out. It's called I Saw the Devil. It's great, okay? Anyway, thank you. And as always, see you next time. Peace.